Welcome to it. It's the Daily Game Color Podcast for the 30th day of December 2019. It's a Monday. But it's a holiday week, so it's a short week, and everybody's going to get drunk on Tuesday night, tomorrow night, so who cares? Or maybe not. I look at Tuesday night as I look New Year's Eve, not Tuesday nights in general, but New Year's Eve as amateur night. It's just, I don't even like to go out anymore. I used to go out and go because you could drink till like 5 o'clock in the morning, at least in Maryland. They would change the last call time, excuse me. And you could go till 5 o'clock in the morning, and man, I would go till 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would go crazy, get hammered, just a complete and total mess at this little dive goth bar club that I used to DJ at in Baltimore. But not anymore. Now that I'm married, even actually before I got married, it's just like, you know what? It's just stupid. There's a whole bunch of people out here. Somebody's going to get killed. I don't want to be it. So I don't really go out. I don't even like to go out of the house on New Year's Eve. I'm old and lame now. God, I've become everything I've despised. I'm Derek Hunter, and I hate myself. Anyway, we've got a special show for you today. It's not a rerun. It's not a best of. It's new. It's going to be shorter, though, probably, just because I'm doing a two-day, because I'm kind of on vacation still. A little bit. Not officially. Something massive happens. There's the shooting at the church in Texas. There was the anti-Semitic attacks in New York. But I want to go a little bit bigger net. I want to, since you can't do justice to a year in 1 hour, although maybe together they'll end up being one hour, I want to take a look back at 2019, because it was a hell of a year. And I think it was the year that the media did more damage to itself than anything else. Yes, at the end of the year, by the end of the year, Donald Trump had been impeached. But the media, in their rush to embrace that, in their rush to facilitate that, in their rush to cause that, and to try to destroy Donald Trump, ended up really destroying themselves. They might look at it as, well, we got Trump impeached. Honestly, if you think about it, over the past 2 weeks since the impeachment happened, how much have you actually heard about it? Not from some reporter, some talking head on television, but from real human beings that you've had interactions with. Have you heard anybody talk about it? I was in college for the Clinton impeachment. It was a big deal. It dominated the news. There were actual crimes alleged. There were serious discussions and debates as to whether or not what Bill Clinton did, and everybody ultimately had to admit that he did, whether or not it warranted impeachment. But it was the dominant news of the day. The impeachment of Donald Trump was kind of like, yeah, we checked that box. Okay, now we can move on to other things. It doesn't seem serious because it's not serious. The people pushing it aren't particularly serious about it. The president doesn't seem to take it all that seriously, nor really should he. It's just there. It just happened. It's amazing that an impeachment of a president of the United States can be a non-story. It's just bizarre to me. So I want to look back at the year that was. We'll play a couple of audio clips. We'll do half of 2019 today, and then half of 2019 for the last day of 2019. And then we can all set about screwing up checks that we write for the next month. I might be the only, I don't really write that many checks anymore, but that was just always the way that's the way I thought of New Year's was, crap, now I've got to make a conscious effort to write the next year on a check rather than the previous year. Anyway, thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, downloading, all that good stuff. While other podcasts take their time off, we aren't taking any, we're sort of taking time off just because we're not keeping up with current events. Unless something massive, massive happens. But first, a word to our favorite sponsor, CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. You think I'm crazy? You think I'm a nut? You think I'm selling snake oil? Look up for yourself what CBD oil benefits are, and then read some testimonials, read some reviews, see what other people are saying about it, see what people, like my dad, although you can't call my dad, he'd be probably angry after a while, but find out what the benefits of CBD oil are and find out if people are actually, look, the promises and the delivery are often wildly different in these things, but they're not when it comes to CBD oil, particularly the all organic CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. They're out there, they're promising, and they're delivering. But again, don't take my word for it. Look it up yourself. See what other people are saying. And you decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try it. I'm going to see what's going on. You go to ancientlifeoil.com, all one word, enter promo code Derek at checkout, D-E-R-E-K, and you get 10% off your order. You take one shot. You try it once, and you'll see what a difference it makes. And then you'll be a believer. Just take one shot. That's all you got to do. Give it a shot. You'll be a believer. That's worked for me. My knees, my eye strain, I am shocked by the results and how quickly the results happen. So go to ancientlifeoil.com, enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get 10% off your order, and you too shall be a believer. Okay, looking back at the year that was, I kind of want to just go through and play some clips from various points throughout the year, the first half of the year here, to sort of give a flavor of what was going on when. There was the big Women's March back in January. I love how these... One thing that 2019, I think, will be remembered for is the year that everybody painted themselves as a victim. And it was a scramble to become a victim. It has always been kind of a fetish of victimhood on the left, but it moved up to a point of aspiration in 2019. Every group you can possibly imagine, every subgroup of possibly every division of human being you can ever come up with and create, they found ways to paint themselves as victims, as horrible, horrible put upon people. And I think a lot of that has to do with the elevation of this, has to do with one person in particular's rise to national prominence. It actually wasn't even really a rise to national prominence as much as it was an elevation to national prominence. There's a difference. A rise to national prominence is you work your way up, where you fight your way forward. You earn your stripes, you pay your dues, you climb the ladder. And the elevation is you are glommed onto and pumped up. You are elevated against, well, not necessarily against your will, but against your accomplishments, against your abilities. You are risen up. You're thrown on the shoulders. And that person that I think is responsible for this sort of level of insanity on the left that we're seeing now as we go into the 2020 election is, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She had, and you have to say her name like that or it's a hate crime. She was elected in 2018. It seems like she's been around forever, but no, she's as much coverage as she's gotten as a backbench, insignificant freshman lawmaker. You would have thought that she had been around forever and she might be the Speaker of the House. She's not. She's a nobody in the grand scheme of things, has no real political power to get things done legislatively, but she can apply pressure in her army of flying monkeys on social media and unleash hell on Democrats to try and pressure them to do things. This, I think, will be the ultimate downfall of the Democratic Party, whether it happens in 2020 or whether it happens in 2021, 22, some point or another. It is, AOC is the Twitter candidate. She is the candidate who believes Twitter is real, believes Twitter is the real world, believes that her having millions of followers signifies something, some kind of movement. And well, if you have 2 million Twitter followers, congratulations, you have 2 million Twitter followers, that's fine. If you want to sell products and have companies pay you a bunch of money to tweet about their products, you can do that. You can monetize your Twitter account at that point, actually a little bit before that point. But to really have influence on the American public is something entirely different. Twitter is not real, the real world. It's not even close to the real world. In a nation of 230 million people, if you have 2 million Twitter followers, you know, that's nothing to sniff at it until you realize that Twitter is worldwide and you can have Twitter followers from anywhere on the planet Earth. I do as well. It's weird that somebody in Australia or in Ireland would care what I have to say, but I appreciate that they're there and I appreciate that they follow me and interact with me. The same goes for AOC. All you do is increase the numbers. 2 million people in a nation of 330 million is nothing. It's a rounding error. It's insignificant. Yet the Democratic Party and the Democratic media seem to be indentured to it. Really? And I mean, it's not quite slavery, but it is indentured to it. If something rages on Twitter, so many politicians, particularly on the left, treat it as though this is a wave, as if Twitter is capturing something in the zeitgeist of the American public. And it's simply not. It is, by the way, there are, you know, millions upon millions of fake accounts out there. So if you're looking at your number of Twitter followers, you can probably subtract 25 to 50% of them as not being real. I think the more followers you have, the less real followers there are. But the Democratic Party seems to believe, or at least is afraid and trying to act accordingly so as not to anger them, to act like Twitter is real life. A very small percentage of the American public is active on Twitter on a daily basis. That's what politicians don't seem to understand, because it's vocal. The squeaky wheel gets the grease and the loudest drum circle gets the pandering. That's what the Democratic Party has become, and that is because of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They look at her election last year as a sort of Twitter revolution, a social media revolution. Look at what she did. She built up this following, even though she didn't have a very big following at the time. And she defeated the number three or four, or whatever the hell Connolly was, Democrat in the House of Representatives. And this is big. And if we don't pay attention to this and these people, we could be challenged from the left just like he was. Well, he actually failed himself. He lost more than she won. In the primary, there weren't that many voters. In a congressional district of 760 some odd thousand, she won her primary. 16,898 votes to 12,880 votes against Joe Crowley. That means less than 30,000 people out of 760 plus thousand voters, or 706,000, sorry, voted for her. Now, it's a heavily Democratic district. Democrats rule that area overwhelmingly. The real race is in the primary. That settled it. But Joe Crowley lost that race more than she won it. Oh, she was given all sorts of credit. Oh, my goodness, she was out walking around, knocking on doors, blah, 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 blah. You really think she knocked on 600,000 different doors? No, she didn't knock on 600,000 doors. She's an inherently lazy person. She just is. She sits around and grouses, and she uses social media. Using social media is about to take place of doing actual legwork is lazy. I can do an Instagram video. I can do a video chat. And there you go. Yes, she was not out there busting on doors. Oh, she knocked on a lot of doors, don't get me wrong. But against an incumbent Democrat, a powerful incumbent Democrat who had been in office for a long time, you don't win it by going out and knocking on 30,000 doors, which was probably about all you could knock on. And you'd have to really pick the right doors, which she wouldn't have access to the data because she didn't have that much campaign money. The way that Joe Crowley lost was he neglected his district. He took it for granted. This happens all the time in politics. It was a surprise when it happens every single time, but it's not a shock, or it shouldn't be a shock. If you think about it, remember J.D. Hayworth? The name may sound vaguely familiar. He was a member of the House of Representatives, a Republican from Arizona. He was all over cable news. He was all over Fox and MSNBC and CNN back when they would have Republicans on and not attack them. He lost. He lost his seat. And you think, how did J.D. Hayworth lose? You see him all the time. How is it that J.D. Hayworth managed to lose? And it's actually pretty simple. The difference between being a popular television pundit member of Congress and an effective member of Congress is massive. So many politicians look at being on cable television as a substitute for legwork, as a substitute for being back in their district. Now, your senator is different, and this is, I don't know, I'm getting off topic here, but I think this is important to really understand how AOC came into prominence and ended up beating a powerful Democrat. The being on TV is no substitute. Senators statewide, people don't expect to have the chance to interact with their senator all that often unless they're willing to travel to wherever the senator is. Now, senators still have to have town halls. Senators still have to go places. They still have to be at ribbon cuttings. They have to be at, you know, parades and big events and whatever. They have to do that. It's boxes that you have to check. But they don't have to be at every opening of everything. They don't have to be really down on the ground in a district. A state is much smaller than a district, except for places like Montana, where they have a gigantic state and one member of the House of Representatives, two senators. They all have, the only difference is one of them has to run every 2 years and the other ones have to run every 6 years. But most states aren't like Montana. So people expect, especially people who are guaranteed to vote, people expect to run into their member of Congress. J.D. Hayworth, while he had staff back in his district, stayed a lot of recesses around Washington, D.C. to get TV hits, to get veil himself of cable news, thinking that, well, if I'm on Fox News, it's just the same as holding a town hall. It's just the same as going to this city council meeting or weighing in on this local issue, whatever it is. And it is not. It is not remotely close to the same. People like to be able to actually physically talk to in person their member of Congress, even if it's just to shoot the breeze. They like to know that they are of their neighborhood. Senators are different. House of Representatives is very personal. And if you don't go back, if you are not seen, if you are seen as sort of becoming part of Washington rather than becoming part of your district or representing your district there, you run risk of losing. J.D. Hayworth lost because he wasn't going back to his district every chance he had. The really effective and long-term reelected members of Congress run back to their districts every chance they get. They're always seen in them. They have their lives, but they're always there. Mia Love comes to mind. She was on cable news a lot. She was elevated, partially because she happened to be a black woman and a Republican. Fox News raised her up and treated her as if she were a national leader. And I think that she, too, thought that, well, being on Fox News is just the same as being at the strip mall talking to business owners. It's not. Joe Crowley was the same kind of way. Look, I am a big muckety-muck in Washington, D.C. I am high-ranking in the Democratic Party leadership in the House of Representatives. We're trying to take over the House again. I have no real challenge. I can just take it for granted. I don't have to go back all the time. We're busy working on more important things here in Washington. And the people of his district saw somebody out there as an alternative. There was also massive amounts of identity politics at play. Joe Crowley is a white guy, whereas AOC is Hispanic, and she played that up big time in a district that has, I think it's majority Hispanic. It's at least majority minority. So she played that card against him as well, but he could have fought it. He didn't even bother showing up to one of the debates they had. He had somebody else show up in his place. That's how lazy you get. That's how complacent you get, thinking that I've got this. I've been here. I've always been reelected. They know who I am. I'm working on important stuff elsewhere. Well, when it comes to the house, people like to have the personal attachment to it. And so Crowley lost in the primary. That gave AOC the seat, essentially. And that, I think, is what's wildly misunderstood about it. She didn't win it nearly as much as he lost it. If he had been a smart member of Congress, we would have never heard of her. But he wasn't. He was an arrogant member of Congress. So let's stroll down AOC's memory lane. As the Democratic Party becomes more captive of Twitter, more and more captive of Twitter, it's dangerous and funny to watch simultaneously. And let's hear just a couple of clips from the spiritual leader, I guess, the social media guru of the Democratic Party, the one and only Alexandria. Oh, by the way, there's stories now that the progressive movement might unite around her. She could be a future presidential candidate. She's 29 or 30 or whatever she is now. So she couldn't run until 2028. But they're already hyping her as being a president, which is scary as hell. And a testament to just how much the party is beholden to the social media cult rather than reality. So here's just let's listen to an AOC clip from 2019.
We're screwed on climate. Like, I'm sorry to break it to you. If we do nothing, there is no hope. Period. That's just a principle across the board. If we do not act, there is no hope. The only time we can hope is when we act. But when it comes to climate in particular, we're actually screwed. There is a global threat to the planet. A global threat. And at this point, we don't even have to prove it. Just walk outside in winter in a lot of places, and it's either way worse than you're used to or way warmer than you're used to. Hurricanes, storms, wildfires. We are dying now.
We are dying now. She's there cooking something in her a very expensive apartment in Washington, D.C., and she's streaming live to her friend. Well, we're dying now. What are we doing? Oh, no, we're dying now. That was from back in February, I believe. She's just making this up as she goes along. And the Democratic Party sees, she has millions of followers on social media. We have to try to appeal to these people. We have to try and win these people over, not just for her, but for all of us, which is stupid, to be perfectly honest with you. Not because those people are stupid, although they are. It's because they already have them. Where do they think those voters are going to go? If you believe that we are on the verge of environmental catastrophe and collapse and the planet becoming uninhabitable and we're all going to die, what do you think? Where do you think those voters are going to go? If they think the key to saving the planet is bigger government, if the key to saving the planet is taxing the hell out of successful people who employ millions of Americans, if you subscribe to that philosophy, where do you think those voters are going to go? Maybe the Green Party or the Socialist Party. There's, 0.03% of the population who will vote for those fringe parties. But in general, they're Democrats. You've got them already. But Democrats in leadership in Washington, D.C. see this and they think, well, this is a movement. We have to capitalize on this movement. We have to co-opt this movement. We have to get out in front of it. They try and equate it to the Tea Party. And there's a huge difference between the Tea Party and the loony fringe followers of AOC. The Tea Party it consisted in large part of people who were not otherwise engaged in politics. They didn't follow it. They were just sick of it all. They didn't pay attention. And they saw the massive bailout for banks and the massive bailout for people who weren't paying their mortgage, for people who bought more home than they could afford. People who had no business taking out a mortgage that large. They knew they would never be able to pay it back. People who made bad decisions. And the government, the Democratic-controlled government, came in and absolved all of these people. It took care of them. It helped them. It boosted them on the backs of the people who had bought the house they could afford, or maybe less house than they could afford, who signed mortgages that they knew they would be able to pay back, that weren't going to balloon, people who read the contracts, people who knew what they were getting into, the responsible people. The Democrats were boosting up the irresponsible people on the backs of the responsible people. And the responsible people got pissed off and they started showing up to vote. And each year, as more, as the Democratic Party continued to ignore that, and a large part, the Republican Party continued to ignore them too. They think, well, we just got elected. We can ignore this crap now. What we do from here on out is what matters, not whether we do what we were elected to do. Those people continued to grow and continued to get angry. Many of them remained or went back to being detached from politics until 2016, when Donald Trump came along and he appealed to them. The politicians aren't looking to you. They're not interested in you. They're not listening to you. They are, you know, screwing you over. They're making your life more difficult. They're costing you your jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that Donald Trump ran on in 2016 about the forgotten men and women in this country. They had been awoken by the Tea Party and the bailouts, and they went back to sleep thinking nobody was paying attention. And Donald Trump came along and appealed to them and woke them back up again. And new voters, people who didn't register in polls because they weren't likely voters because they hadn't voted for a number of years. And if you don't vote for two consecutive elections, you aren't considered a likely voter. So they throw you out of those likely voter polls. But when you finally had somebody out there who appealed to you, who was telling you the things that you believed and said that they were going to actually do them, then they showed up in mass and shocked everybody on November 8th, 2016. The Democrats seem to think that these people that AOC appeals to are that same type of people, different belief sets, obviously, but the same type of people who aren't engaged, who aren't involved in politics, but now they're being woken up and being brought into politics. I don't think that's the case. I don't think if you really believe that the planet is coming to an end, if life on Earth is going to end soon because of government inaction, I don't think you're a passive person on that. And it wasn't as though Democrats weren't paying at least lip service to that sort of hysteria. They were. They had been for a very long time. So these voters that are AOC devotees were already in the Democratic Party column. Where they were going to go other than vote for Democrats, who the hell knows? But to uproot the entire party and risk alienating almost everybody else in the country to appeal to a fanatical fringe who's already in your pocket seems suicidal to me. And I'm not saying this because I want to warn Democrats. Democrats aren't going to listen to me. I think it's great. I think it's one of the best things to happen to Republicans was the election and ascension, the elevation of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to a national leader in the Democratic Party. They gave a face to the crazy. Nancy Pelosi, for as crazy as she is, she knows how to give an interview. She knows how to present herself publicly so as to not really go and cause normal people to go, holy crap, she's a nut. You know, you can, if you pay attention to what she's doing, you can find that. And every once in a while, she'll slip up and you'll go, oh my God, these Democrats are crazy. They want to do all sorts of horrible things. Even Barack Obama wanted to do some crazy things. But when he was out there presenting it to the country, he was selling it in, you know, safe tones, in terms that sugarcoated it, that at least powder sugar dusted it. AOC does not have that in her. She does not have that internal filter. It gave the real lunatic fringe on the left a home, somebody to rally behind, but it was already people they already had. That the rest of the party decided to follow her over that cliff, I think is great. I think is a wonderful thing. When a party embraces Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, two raging anti-Semite racist pieces of garbage, because to not embrace them, they would be accused of racism and risk alienating the people that they most want to appeal to. They don't want, a normal person would say, all right, you guys are devotees to the squad, the Gang of Four. All right, well, let's have a serious conversation. We want the same things. We're just going to have to do it a little differently. We're going to have to do it in a more sane. We can't talk about it because we've got you. We need to appeal beyond you. So we're going to have to talk about these things and make the case to the rest of the people. You're a true believer, but not everybody's a true believer. And we have to try and get more true believers, something like that. But you can't do that because the people they're trying to appeal to and the people that they are appealing to will accept nothing but 100% blind loyalty and deference to the liberal agenda. Anything short of 100% is considered selling out. They're appealing to the lunatics. They're appealing to the crazies. I don't think most Democratic voters are paying attention to that, but if you watch the Democratic primary process to this point, they are literally out there trying to appeal to the freaking lunatics. And you can't name a crazy policy idea, whether it is felons voting while still in prison, terrorists voting while still in prison, people voting from death row because, well, people should be able to vote. You should not take away somebody's right to vote. When Bernie made that case and other Democrats got on board, that was, I thought that was a huge boost to the Republican Party. You cannot be like, yeah, you'll find a constituency for, hey, we've got to, We got to restore voting rights to felons. You'll find a constituency for that. I'm not part of it. I don't want that. I think you screwed up and you're out. That's it. But you will find a constituency for that. You won't find a large constituency outside of the fringe loons that say people should be able to vote while in prison. You know, if you're in prison for murder, the person you murdered's voting rights are gone. I think that saying that you should not be able to then vote while you're serving out your prison term for killing someone is not viewed as a massive sort of injustice. But to the left, it is. To the left, everything is an injustice. They need to keep people riled up and angry and fearful and freaking out to prevent them from critically thinking. I'm not sure many of them are capable of critically thinking, but you have to prevent that critical thinking. I write about that a lot in my book, which if you haven't purchased yet, you should absolutely go and purchase. But it is where the left is. They're appealing to the people they've got. They're trying to keep them angry and riled up, and they think that's the key to electoral success. It worked in 2018 because it was all theoretical. Now we have a year of seeing it in reality, and I don't think the American people like it very much, to be perfectly honest with you. I think most normal people, when they pay attention, when the Republicans start running ads of what these presidential candidates have said throughout these debates, are going to look at that and go, holy shit, these people are crazy. Because they are. Let's play another. This was the year of AOC, so maybe that's what this episode will be. Let's play another AOC clip.
Because we are standing on native land, and Latino people are descendants of native people, and we cannot be told and criminalized simply for our identity or our status.
Yes, on immigration, she was the forefront there. Again, she was the tip of the stupid spear. calling ICE agents Nazis, referring to detention centers as concentration camps, and always with the identity politics. Latino, we cannot be this. We were here first, blah, 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 blah. I am a Native American. I was born here in this country, and I don't give a damn what some mental midget from Queens thinks of that or wants to label me. This is who the left has become, and it's thanks to AOC. Now, they had been drifting down this road for some time. She just came along and pushed it along, and leadership got on board, because leaders in Washington, D.C. of both parties are very good followers, very obedient followers. They see a wave, and they're like surfers. Ooh, there's a wave. I'm going to go catch that. I'll ride that till it crashes, and then we're going to go to this one and the other one. But AOC, if she didn't exist, they would have to make her in a laboratory. She is the culmination of all of their stupid, of all of their crazy. And now she's out there. There, I don't think, is a single American citizen whom she hasn't called some kind of ist or phobe in the past year, as a member of Congress. She's on social media. I'm not going to bore you with reading any of her tweets, but her tweets consist almost exclusively of her building up a straw man and then painting herself as a victim. All Republicans are coming after me because I'm a strong Latino woman. Then why are you whining all the time? If you're so strong, why are you whining all the time? If you're so wonderful and powerful, why are you crying all the time? Why are you claiming to be a victim all the time? If you're such a wonderful, powerful person. I love these. It always kind of, there's this disconnect on the left. Women can do anything. Women are strong. Women should be treated as equals. And then you criticize them for or disagree with them and do it in critical terms. And they go, well, you're only attacking me because I'm a woman. Okay, which is it, honey? Are you strong and can stand on your own and want to be treated the same way men are treated? Or when you're treated the same way as men, are you going to run and whine and go, oh, you're only attacking me because I have a uterus? Oh, and by the way, you're not allowed to be. It's not, that doesn't constitute a woman. That doesn't mean you're a woman at all. It just, that's just biology, and that's meaningless social construct. This is what the left is, and it's being led by AOC. Now, literally, I could play an hour of AOC just whining and complaining about this, that, and the other thing, and we're going to die, and lying, and being stupid, and getting things wrong, but I'm not going to do that. I don't want to inundate you with that. But I did put together a little montage earlier this year. This is probably 6 months old, maybe 5 months old, of one interview she did. I think it might have been at South by Southwest, where I literally, without repeating a single one, just took the likes she said from one three-minute clip. I think it was 3 minutes, but from one short clip. It wasn't even the whole interview. The number of times she said like. She is Moon Unit Zappa. She is a Valley girl, and she is now the leader of the Democratic Party. Since I cut this stuff together, let's listen to it again.
It's so funny, like, today there was this story that came out in the, like, media attention, because, it, like, this is not a normal, what's really weird is that it just gets so, like, it's so crazy. It's like, it feels to me, like, but, like, about how, like, does she live in the Bronx, like, we asked people at her old apartment if they'd seen her, and it's like, but anyways, it's like, does she even live in the Bronx? Because they were like, and it's like, it just feels like entitled to like, that they don't ask for of other people. It's like, I don't know if you all saw, but like literally arrested before trying to like.
Okay, that was from an Instagram chat that she did, and that was a three-minute clip that I edited down and just took out the number of times she said the word like. You heard it. 21 times. 21 times in 3 minutes. AOC is out there like. She's now kind of receded into the background of the Democratic leadership and the media. She's not that much out there right now. And I think that is partially due to Nancy Pelosi sort of asking her to step back, asking her to sidle back. She can still tweet, and she still tweets stupid things, but she's not doing many interviews. She's not putting herself out there as much as she did at the very beginning, because I think that the leadership of the Democratic Party recognizes that while they want to appeal to her audience, they want to appeal to her voters and supporters, they also don't want her to be seen by the American people. Unfortunately for Democrats, unfortunately for the rest of us, the internet is forever. The internet is forever, and all the stuff that she put out there that they have now embraced, they just happen to be better at messaging at it than she is out there. We see it. We have it. We have it captured. And when it comes time, expect her to again be made the face of the Democratic Party over the whiny Democrats complaining that she's just one member. Remember Nancy Pelosi? These are three members. Three members of the of a caucus of like 230. They're no big deal. There's nothing. I don't know. She knows what she's got. They have this electoral strategy. Nancy Pelosi is in on it. It's the reason impeachment happened. It is the reason impeachment happened, trying to placate and appeal to the base and the social media footprint of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The Democratic Party has screwed itself. They've painted themselves into a corner, and I think that's a beautiful thing. I've always said, and I stand by the fact that the best thing that Donald Trump has going for him is just how crazy his opponents are, how bat crap crazy Democrats are. And make no mistake, they are as crazy as they get. They're not out there arguing with lampposts, mostly because they're too high to do it. I love it. I love every minute of it. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up here just because it's a slow news day, and I don't think anybody needs to hear any more AOC. But tomorrow we will look back at the year in Trump investigations, the year in general. We'll see what happens. Hopefully there won't be any major news, just because major news is never good news. And it's going to be New Year's Eve tomorrow, and everybody should have a fun and safe and happy New Year's Eve. And I don't want to see something awful happen that overtakes any of that. But I thank you for listening. I appreciate the hell out of you listening. Sorry to have given you even the minimal amount of AOC that I gave you today, but I think it's important to understand that she is now running the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party is now doing it on their own without her. They're trying to shelter her because she's so insane she can't control herself. They want to encapsulate her ideas without her being out in front of it. I would say that's racist. You pull AOC back, a woman of color, and you put out Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler, people of non-color. They're clear. Isn't that racist? Shouldn't that be decried as racist? I would think so. But then I just like stirring the pot because they're a bunch of freaking lunatics trying to ruin our country. And we're here trying to stop them. We'll be back here trying to stop them for one more time in 2019. Will you miss 2019? Actually, if you're listening to this point, what do you think is your biggest news story of 2019? You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Tell me what you think the big story of 2019 was. Maybe I'll read your email on the show tomorrow. Even though it's Monday, Mondays suck. It's a 4-day work week, technically. I like having the holiday. I prefer having the holiday on a Friday because then you get the 3-day weekend. But in the middle of the week isn't bad because then you just have two 2-day work weeks, which isn't, you know, it's kind of nice. It's better than the alternatives of not having a 5-day work week. Anyway, enough whining, enough complaining. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
We basically need to propose a solution on the scale and of the magnitude of the problem. We have one shot. We have one shot because we could have had three, four, five shots at this. But to be very frank, people didn't try. For 30 or 40 years, they wrung their hands and they said it's too complex. And now people are dying in the thousands.